what's the matter, you? Hey, got no respect. What do you think you do? Why you look so sad? It's not so bad. It's a nicer place. Ah, shut up your face.
Hello and welcome to Your Face Has a Podcast, aka Facecast, the official podcast of Your Face. I'm Nick Jobe of Your Face.
I'm Steve Honeywell of 1001 Plus, and the only person on today's episode that doesn't post on Your Face.
But you do actually have input at Your Face.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, and and we are reuniting, Steve.
Yes, and it feels so good.
It does. Reuniting, and it feels so good.
See, I wasn't going to actually sing.
Hey, my previous podcast was a musical, so I kind of
have
to.
Yes, I know, and I had to sing on that, so yeah. I'm not going to do it here.
All right. As Steve implied, the other person today that we have with us, our guest, is also up your face, which is the one and only and irreplaceable Jason Soto.
What up, bitches?
And there's our rating. No.
No, he has to get way harsher for that. That'll come.
Yeah.
I don't expect we'll go more than a couple more minutes before Jason says something that gives us an R rating.
Oh, yeah.
I'm hoping you shoot for NC-17 today, Jason.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know I will. Mm-hmm. You know what? Just to secure that, I'll take my pants off.
Oh, works for me. I think all of us already were there at that point before you.
Oh, okay.
Well, I don't. My pants are on. They're just unzipped.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, so for those of you who listened to our previous shows that we did together, yeah, this is going to be slightly different than Demented Podcast or even the previous version of Facecast. For instance, the biggest change is we no longer will be doing the Demented Tower.
Boo. I'm just speaking for the people. Boo.
Yeah, you're not speaking for me, man, because that script was a pain in the butt to write every time.
But you know what? It's okay that because I won the definitive version of the Demented Tower, which was the video version.
Yeah, the movie version, which can be found at Your Face at www.yourfaces8.com.
And I will always have that, so yeah. I don't care from this point forward.
Yep.
And I got to torture you in that video.
Well, I think everyone got to torture me in that video, so...
Hey, I got to have
I'm just
Jason.
Saying I specifically.
Yeah.
Well, no, between you, Nolan, and Nick. Mainly Nick.
Getting Jason this is gonna on his sound, knees.
This is going to sound way off out of context, but my knees have never hurt so much after being on camera for so long.
All weekend on your knees, Jason.
Yes. Like, goddamn, I needed knee pads by Sunday. That's all I got to say.
All right.
Who was the fluffer on that picture?
Vern.
Vern. All right. Anyway, a couple other differences. We've changed up a few things here and there. We will have a game for you, though, but we will talk about that one at the end of the episode.
Go ahead. Yeah, there's a little bit of a change in how we actually pick the movies, too.
Yeah. You want to talk about that, Steve?
Sure, I'd be happy to. The way this used to work was our guest would pick a genre, and Nick would pick a movie I hadn't seen, and I would pick a movie Nick hadn't seen, which sort of left the guest out of what we watched, and we decided to change that. So this time, our guest picks a movie and then picks one random minor aspect of that movie and forces Nick and me to pick another movie to match that aspect, which is sometimes not that hard and sometimes really hard.
Yeah.
So we have the guest picks a movie and a thing to connect it to another movie, and we have to pick the movie that's the...
Yeah.
And that's how it works.
If you ever watched my show, The Vlog... it is very, very similar to completely random movie comparison.
I would say that might even affect the inspiration.
Indeed.
Fair enough.
Alright, since it's October, we thought it would be fun to start off the show with a bit of horror.
Woohoo!
Yeah. That's...
What'd you call me?
Horror.
Or, yeah. So this month, we're looking at a completely random movie comparison involving people who spend the night in a place to get something.
You remember when I said that sometimes this one wasn't actually hard to think of another movie, but it was hard to think of like a second other possibility.
Right.
Really? I could have named like three others.
I'm sure you could have.
Yeah, but you've probably seen a lot more of this kind of genre movie than we have.
Yeah, that's combined. Fair enough.
All right. So let's cue up the first segment, our guest choice.
First I say, what we're going to do? Then you say, I don't know, what do you want to do? Then I say, what we're going to do? You say, what you want to do? What we're going to do? What you want? Let's do something!
Okay, what do you want to do?
Oh, blimey.
So, Jason?
Yes?
What you want to do?
What do I want to do?
Yeah, what movie?
Oh, well, fucking classic.
Yeah.
House on Haunted Hill.
Yeah, original Vincent Price.
And yeah, I don't want anyone to give me any shit about not picking, you know, not my taste not being, you know, classic or whatever. I do like some older movies. I don't prefer them, but I do like some. And so this is probably a surprise to a lot of people. Like, wait, what? But I do love this movie.
I just want to say how much I honestly appreciate the fact that you went with the original and not the shitty remake.
I'll be honest, I haven't seen the remake.
I have seen the remake, and
you're safe.
Yeah,
you're good. You're good. Not seeing.
I probably will check out eventually, but I haven't seen it. I have seen the remake of The Haunting, though. So
yeah, if I remember correctly, the character in the original, who's the one who's getting drunk the whole movie because he knows the house is haunted and all that, yep, is played by Chris Kattan in the remake.
Yeah, I think so. You're right.
Yeah.
That sounds about right.
And I'm just going to say it now. No movie is ever going to be well received that includes the words featuring Chris Kattan. Just doesn't bode well for anybody.
All right. So who wants to talk about this? Jason, you want to start us off with some plot?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so it's a 1959 film starring the great actor, horror actor, Vincent Price. He plays they call him a millionaire, but it's 1959, so he's a millionaire by 1959 standards. And he's invited five seemingly random people to a supposedly haunted house way up in the hills somewhere with no neighbors anywhere around, and it's like very secure. There's bars on the windows. The door is what they call an ironclad door. It won't open for anything. And he's there to host a secretive party, but no one's really sure what kind of party it is or what's going to happen or what's going on. He's married to some chick. I can't remember her name right now. And their relationship's like really odd. Like, they hate each other. Like the Lockhorns hate each other. Like, this is like a movie equivalent of the Lockhorns. And they're just constantly threatening each other, and they keep like saying, I can't, you know, oh, you just want me dead and you're gonna kill me. And it's a really weird relationship these two have. And so basically one of the party members is the owner of the house, who has a long history with the house and knows that there's ghosts and weird shit happening, and he just freaks out basically the entire movie.
A bunch of people die in really crazy ways.
Yeah, and like two people's heads went missing, and yeah, it was just all kinds of crazy shit went on in this house. And so he just drinks like the entire movie, like, and just keeps rattling on about, oh, they're gonna get you, they're gonna get us, ah.
He's also the only other actor I can actually name. That's Elisha Cook Jr., who's sort of one of the great character actors of the era.
Ah.
I can't name anybody else who's in this movie, but Elisha Cook Jr. was like the gunman in The Maltese Falcon, for instance. So this guy has a huge, huge number of movies he was in, and always is sort of this like weird little toady guy.
Yeah, I thought he looked familiar, but you know, I thought it was just because I've seen this movie a few times. So, yeah, so see what the plot really quick, just kind of wrap up. So, they're on the house, and then, Vincent Price says that if they stay in the house until morning, each of them will get $10,000. And each of them needs money for various reasons, which really aren't super important to the story. And then crazy shit just happens from that forward, and then we can go from there.
So, Steve, you want to talk about the characters, the various characters?
Yeah, I do, actually. So there's basically seven characters in the movie. There's a caretaker and his wife who show up at one point or a couple times, but they're not really that critical of the plot. You got Vincent Price and his wife. You've got the woman who's scared of everything all the time, who's sort of our main character. You've got the drinking McDrinks a lot, the Elisha Cook Jr. guy. You've got the pompous psychologist. You've got the test pilot guy whose head is shaped like a trapezoid. And then you've got this other woman who is completely worthless. Yeah. She does nothing for the movie.
That's true.
There is absolutely no point. If she were eliminated from the movie, the one thing that happens to her is blood drips on her twice. If you made blood drip on a different character, you could eliminate her completely.
Yeah. And I love her reaction, too, because it's like blood drips on her. She doesn't freak out. She just looks at it and is like, oh, blood is dripping on me. And then she like takes a drink of more. What was it?
That's the one thing she does in the movie is every time anyone asks if somebody wants a drink, she orders a drink, and she always orders scotch and. Scotch and what?
And then I guess
scotch and corned beef?
I'm guessing women weren't allowed to make drinks in the 50s because she just like kept standing around saying, who's going to make me a drink? Like, you're 10 inches from the bar. You can do it yourself.
Honest to God, all she ever ordered was scotch and. And if someone ever asked me for a drink and said, I'd like a scotch and, you're getting scotch with a ho-ho in it. You're getting scotch dishwashing liquid. Be specific, bitch. It's an extra word. Jesus, it's two syllables. If it's scotch and water or scotch and soda, is it that much effort? Otherwise, you're getting scotch in an oven mitt.
And this has been another Steve rant.
I'm sorry, I've missed it.
Continually
this.
Pissed me off. It pissed me off throughout the entire movie. Just say the extra word, you stupid bitch. Good God. You useless, worthless character who isn't even there for comic relief.
She wants scotch and blood.
Evidently. Yeah. All she has to do is hold her cup under the faucet on the ceiling.
Yeah. All right, so what other talking points do we have for this?
Sorry.
Sorry
to kill the mood there.
Nah, it's okay. Well, if it's okay, I'd like to talk about this for a minute. We were talking earlier about how I don't like slow burn movies, and this is technically a slow burn movie, but I like this just because, honestly, I think this is how a slow burn movie should be, because like, you get this whole setup, but then you have this mystery around it of like, okay, what's up with everybody? Why are they really connected? What's up with Vincent Price? Is he actually who he says he is? Does he have ulterior motives? There's just a lot, you know, you have to try to figure out. Whereas there are slow burn movies where it's literally a character walking around a fucking stable for 20 minutes looking at fucking dogs. But I digress. What I kind of like about these 1950s movies is that they're really short. Like, they don't overstay their welcome. They don't pad the movie. You know, this easily could have had like a billion other shots of like the chick who ordered drinks just sitting there drinking for 10 minutes, or, you know, Vincent Price roaming around a hallway. Like, they didn't have to do any of that.
Yeah, this, it's like an hour and 15 minutes.
Right, and it's
really pared down.
Yeah, and I like that. I like that it's that short. Like, it just tells you everything you need to know. It starts right away. They're at the house. Well, they drive to the house. They get to the house. Vincent Price is all creepy, as he normally is, and just the characters are all very, you know, very well introduced. And, this is like my favorite type of slow burn movie. If every slow burn movie was like this, I would like slow burn movies.
It's worth saying this is a William Castle movie, and I don't know how much William Castle you guys have seen. But he did like the original 13 Ghosts and the mm-hmm. Tingler and, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And there's a part of me that wonders how someone could not like William Castle. Because this shit is fun. It's just fun. Mm-hmm. This movie is not scary at all.
Yeah, it's kind of hokey.
yeah, completely hokey. I mean, there's maybe one or two good jump moments, like the old creepy woman in the basement.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Where she's just standing there with her hands as claws and then kind of floats off for absolutely no purpose that's ever explained. But that's a good jump moment. But this movie is a Carnival Funhouse scary. I mean, it's you jump and then you laugh because it's so goofy. But William Castle was sort of this genius of promotion.
Mm-hmm.
And for this movie, he created something he called Emergo. Basically, there's a skeleton at the end of the movie, and when that scene showed up in the movie, he would have a physical skeleton fly around the inside of the theater on wires.
Yep.
How fucking awesome is that?
Really awesome.
I mean, I think this might also have been the movie that he made people sign a waiver.
Yeah,
they went in the
it was,
theater,
yeah.
So that if they died of fright, he wouldn't be held responsible.
yes, it was. It was even
and
in the trailer.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
How do you not love a guy who comes up with shit like that? That's just great.
Yeah. there were a few things with the plot that we're going to get into a little bit of spoilers here. That kind of bugged me. Well, like, I'm okay with things not being explained, but there's some things about the plot that aren't explained that if you think about it too much, it brings in some big plot holes, at least how I kind of saw it. First, how did he come up with the people, like the characters, to come to the house? If it was just random, then that means he chose the psychiatrist or whoever, the doctor, at random. And if that's the case, wouldn't the wife that the psychiatrist is having an affair with be suspicious that Vincent Price knew they were having an affair and, you know, quote-unquote, chose him at random?
Well, throughout, like, most of the movie, like, I don't know if it was ever since she saw him, but she was always suspicious of him. Like, through the whole movie, like, was expecting him to, like, kill her or, you know, thought, well, he's having all these people over so he can have witnesses or alibis or whatever. So that might have something to do with it.
Yeah, the other thing is this. If you look at the five guests when they're introduced, you've got the guy who owns the house, you've got Scaredy Woman, who actually works for Vincent Price,
mm-hmm.
and then the other three people, the psychiatrist, the guy whose head is shaped like a trapezoid, and the worthless woman – all of those three people are prominent individuals. The psychologist is a well-known psychologist. The guy who's like the apparently the male lead that isn't Vincent Price, Trapezoid Head.
He's a pilot.
He's like a test pilot. Yeah, he's a test pilot.
Yeah.
And the drunk useless woman is like a gossip columnist.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these are names that they would know. These are like – this would be like, oh, I'm having a party and I'm inviting these two people and, you know, Dear Abby and Chuck Yeager. So, I mean, they're known people. So that would be maybe the cover for that. Oh, I don't know them, but I know of them.
Right. And it, he could have just explained it off as, you know, coincidence.
Sure.
Yeah. And another thing, I thought this was kind of funny. Nora, the scared woman, mm-hmm. She would always get, like, terrified and then be perfectly fine a couple seconds later.
Right. Yeah. She would be like attacked in the basement, run upstairs, and she'll say, "There's something," and then be okay like 1 second later.
Yeah.
The other thing is this. I mean, she's either really, really dumb or really, really unobservant, because at one point she finds a severed head in her case. That is the worst, most obvious fake severed head I have ever seen in anything. I've seen more realistic – severed heads in animated films. I mean, that is the – it's like someone made a shrunken head and forgot to shrink it. It's that bad. It's so stupid looking. And she's like, "Oh, it's a severed head." No, it's not. It's a wax dummy, you twit.
Then she runs out of the room screaming and then stops in the hallway and just wanders, not freaking out anymore.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. She's like, she's She's kind of like a three, like a goldfish memory. Yeah. I'm scared. Oh, I can't see it anymore. I'm fine.
Yeah.
I don't know. But boy, at the end of the movie, all she does is scream. And I will say this, she's got a pretty good scream.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it's very hokey, it's very goofy, but it still has a great atmosphere to it.
Yeah, it does. It really does.
A lot of that comes from Vincent Price, and I'm wondering, honestly, how much of that comes just from Vincent Price's reputation?
Right.
Because it's Vincent Price.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
I mean, he walks out at the... Big spoilers for this ancient movie by this point. He walks out of the shadows at the end wearing this giant puppeteer like device. And yep. But even then you're like, okay, I guess. You know, it's Vincent Price, so it works.
Right, yeah. I mean, you couldn't – not many people could pull that off in 1959. Uh-huh. Maybe Christopher Lee or Peter Cushing. That's about it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this is – it's just a goofy film, but it's a lot of fun. I mean, this is the kind of – like if you've got 10-year-old kids that want to watch a scary movie, quote-unquote, for Halloween, put this in.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not really that scary. You know, it's a fun scary – you know, you jump for a second, then you laugh at how stupid it is, and it's just a really fun time. I love this movie. This is probably the sixth or seventh time I've seen it, so.
And the skeleton is credited as himself.
Yep. Yes. And gotta love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, what was this? This had to be filmed in, like what, a weekend?
Possible.
I mean, seriously.
It's possible.
It's basically one location. All they had to do was rent a house. It's 75 minutes long. There's not really that much in terms of acting in this. It's like people running around and a woman screaming a lot and, you know, drinking. That's pretty much it. Although, the one kind of unexplained thing to me, and again, this is minor spoiler, but not really, because you were talking about unexplained stuff, Nick, is the scene where Nora's in her bedroom and the rope comes up and wraps around her leg.
Yeah,
and the dead one, because at one point Vincent Price's wife pretends to hang herself, and she's floating outside. Now I get how they could get her to pretend to float outside with the same sort of rig that he used with the skeleton, but how did they get the rope to wrap around her leg? How the hell did they do that?
Yeah, I don't know.
And that's the one place where I think, because the whole thing, I mean, there's no supernatural in the movie when you get to the end. Mm-hmm. It's all people doing shit to each other. How'd they get the rope to do that? That's the one thing that bothers me.
Yeah, that is a good point. I didn't even think of that, because by the end I was so enamored with, like, the three twists, you know, one right after the other. Like, I just kind of forgot about the rope bit.
The twists are good, though.
I mean,
as a plot, the movie actually works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So. Yeah, it's a ghost movie without any ghosts.
Or is there?
Or is there?
Because now they're coming for you.
Yeah.
I loved how a lot of movies in the 50s had to end with them breaking the fourth wall and saying, "They're coming for you."
Well, the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers is still the classic in that, but
yeah.
That was really effective. I think most of these, anything that comes after Body Snatchers, which this does, is sort of copying on the Body Snatchers. You're next!
Well, of course, but sure. It was like a thing that was back then, so.
For this style, absolutely.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, again, yes, the ghosts are coming for you. What ghosts?
Yeah. Another. This is completely random, but... I noticed this movie has and I know it came first, but there are a lot of similarities to Clue in this movie.
Yeah, I kind of had that thought too when I rewatched it this last time. I was like, this is kind of like Clue in a way.
Yeah, I mean, you have the strangers meeting up in an old mansion. They don't know why they're there, and then he brings out a few boxes of weapons for them to have with them.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one thing after the other. It's very similar to Clue.
They all wake up at some point and look in different rooms.
Yeah.
There's a murder.
Yeah, it's just, there's so much stuff here that's just sort of like, haunted house goofy, you know, bad movie goofy, like not explained, like, you know, there's a giant vat of acid in the basement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who has a vat of acid in their basement?
Well, I mean, that was kind of explained. I didn't get the explanation, but they did explain it.
Yeah, the guy was a winemaker. So what? He decided to create a giant, not like there's like a tub. It's like, you know, a 10x10 built into the floor with a trapdoor vat pool of acid, of like some sort of molecular acid. Yeah, because I'm going to use that in my winemaking.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously. And I like that. And they just leave it there. It's like, oh, is it still there? Yeah, it's still there. It's still highly dangerous. We haven't done anything to get rid of the giant dangerous vat of acid.
Now,
we've just left it here.
That I'm wondering if they just refilled it with acid for their whole twisty murder plot.
Maybe. I don't know.
That's a possibility.
It's like, oh, you know, let's go into the basement. My TV's down in the basement. Watch out for the shark tank I have, you know, built into the floor. Don't slip in.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it's fun. This movie is a lot of fun. I love the hell out of it just because it's so silly.
Yeah. So are we ready to do reasons to see it and skip it?
I am.
Sure. All right.
Jason, what is your reason to see it?
Oh, my reason to see it is if you want to see Vincent Price basically in his prime in a movie, this is the movie you go to. So I think this was like classic Vincent Price right here.
Steve?
Because everyone should see and appreciate William Castle, and this is probably William Castle's best movie.
Mm-hmm. And my reason to see it is because it actually has a very clever, twisty ending.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Jason, skip.
I guess if you don't like black and white movies, I mean, I can't think of any else reason why you wouldn't want to see this, so that's my reason, I guess.
Two words. Scotch and.
Yeah, mine's more like if you want something really scary, like the scares here are really goofy, so don't come into this wanting to be, like, terrified. It's more just kind of silly.
I would agree.
Fair enough. That's three.
All right. I think that about does it for that. Steve, I think we should slip into something a little more comfortable.
I agree.
Won't you excuse me for a moment while I slip into something a little bit more comfortable?
All right. The more comfortable this month comes to us as 1408, the John Cusack, Samuel Jackson, Stephen King movie.
And if I remember correctly, Nick, you're the one who picked this, so you might want to do a little bit on why you picked it.
Okay. Yeah, I did pick this one. I actually really like this movie. I saw it in theater, and I saw it, and I got it on DVD when it first came out a long time ago. And it's a PG-13 horror movie that I think really does well, despite its rating. It's very atmospheric and stuff, which we'll talk about after a while. But I quite like it, and it's about John Cusack, who plays a very, very cynical writer who goes around to scared, like, quote-unquote scariest places in, I guess, the United States. It never really specifies. Maybe the world. And rates them and puts them, like, in top 10 list books. But his thing is that he had a daughter that died of, I guess, cancer or something. And it kind of ripped his family apart. And so he's just a very cynical alcoholic loner and goes around doing this, trying to find ghosts but never really expecting them to appear. And one day he gets a message, or like a postcard, from the Dolphin Hotel in New York about not staying in room 1408, and he tries to go there, and Samuel Jackson, who runs the hotel, does everything that he can to not get Cusack into that room, and But he ends up staying in there anyway, and a bunch of stuff goes down because, as Sam Jackson says, it is just an evil fucking room.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Sounds right to me.
And the room has a body count of, what, 54 people?
Yeah, something like that. And some of them are natural deaths. One guy drowned in his soup.
Yeah. Right.
And you don't really know, like, is the room actually doing stuff, like, hurting them, or is it all inside their heads? Like, it kind of comes down to the room won't actually kill you, but it makes you want to kill yourself.
Right.
Yeah, it basically fucks with your head so much, you're just like, I can't take it anymore, and you just want to just do something to end it all.
Yeah.
Well, and it does more than that as we get to by the end. I won't jump to that spoiler yet, but it sort of implies that that's the only way to leave the room.
Yeah. The main thing I besides the atmosphere of this movie, I love how it's just this creepy tension that kind of perfectly builds on itself throughout the movie. Like, it's almost a slow build where it just kind of builds up the room more and more, and then he finally gets to the room, and he has that line, "This is it?" And and then from there, just like the little things start happening just a little bit at a time, and it just builds like one thing after the other until the very end where it's just chaos, and then the song plays again and it starts all over.
And I gotta say, the song is really well used. The first time that happens, it's, you know, it's kind of a nice little jump moment. But then it continues to happen, and it just gets creepier every time. And for those of you who haven't seen this, it's not a huge spoiler to say, because it happens like 25 minutes into the movie. The song that keeps playing is The Carpenters' We've Only Just Begun.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which is great. It's really, really great. There's a lot of things that work in this really well. It's a pretty scary movie, and I will say that I watched this mostly on Saturday, Friday, sorry. And I was at work, and I was sort of done with the day, but I had to stay near my office for something later that night. So I was just sitting at my desk, and I thought, well, I'll watch 1408. And the office closed. And if there hadn't been a couple of people who were just hanging out past the time we closed, I would have left. Because that's not a movie you want to watch when you're the last person in a building.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's pretty effective in a lot of places.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Jason?
I like it. I don't think it's, like, too terrible.
There's a ring endorsement.
I'm just trying to think how to word it. So, okay.
It doesn't suck that much.
Well, it doesn't. But, no, I didn't think it sucked. It was interesting. It's an interesting idea for a story. It's just, it's based on a Stephen King short story, which kind of tells me that they probably didn't have a whole lot to go on when they made the movie. So I think they added a few things to make it a little bit longer, like a movie length time, and I kind of can tell where that might have been, because it just kind of started, not like, I don't know how to put it, like, not like overstaying its welcome, but kind of just like, okay, and then there's that part where, spoilers, he thinks he's out of the room where it turned out, oh, it was really just a dream I had because I got knocked out surfing. And there's that whole part where he's out in the real world for like 10 minutes. And then it's like, oh, no, you're actually in the room. Like that. It was like, okay, yeah, okay. But, yeah, it was an okay movie. I liked it.
There are a bunch of Stephen King tropes in there, though. I mean, you have the alcoholic character, the abusive father, probably the kid trauma, what else is there?
Main character's a writer.
Yeah, main character's a writer.
Yeah. Creepy hotel room.
Yeah. There's a handful of things that if you know Stephen King, you will spot every single one of them in this.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's one thing about this movie that really bugs me, and it's something that it has in common with a lot of movies like this, and it's that the movie gets the idea of skepticism wrong. It totally gets the idea of skepticism wrong. It tries to get it right. It gets it right in one point, because when things start going haywire in the movie and John Cusack is in the room and shit starts happening and it's starting to get mildly creepy, he realizes that he's been drinking booze that was given to him by Samuel Jackson, and he says, "I've been drugged." Mm-hmm. Yes, that's where you should stay, sir. That's what happened until you have evidence otherwise. But 30 seconds after he says that, he's interacting with shit going on in the room. He talks to Samuel Jackson in the fridge.
Well, isn't that, that's a bit later, though.
It is a bit later. But at some point, if you've been drinking something that someone else gave you, and less than an hour later, you're having a conversation with a tiny man in your mini fridge, do you honestly think you're in reality or that you've been drugged?
Well, I think, I don't know, I think it, the stuff that happens to him at that, you know, from the point he thinks that he was drugged to the point where he was, you know, interacting with the room and, like, yelling at Samuel Jackson within his refrigerator, which is a really weird scene, by the way. Yeah. I think enough had happened to kind of break through his cynicism, and make him say, okay, shit's kind of getting real. Like, I'm, you know, I got hurt. I want out of here. Like, there's so much going on specifically happening to him that, it kind of moves beyond the point of just being drugged.
And yet the movie strongly implies that that whole talking to Sam Jackson in the fridge is a hallucination. Because we see him talking to Sam Jackson and it pulls back and he's got a fridge full of food that he's yelling at.
Yeah.
So, you know, but again, you know, he says, I'm drugged, this is going to be a bad trip, you know, I just got to stay straight for 5 hours and I'll be okay. And not 2 minutes later, he's talking to his dead father in the bathroom. Mm-hmm. That is a different place than his actual bathroom.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm sorry, if you think you've been drugged, maybe you interact with your hallucinations, but there's a part of you that's still thinking, this is a hallucination. He buys into it way too quickly. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I find that frustrating. And skepticism is not cynicism, damn it. They're not the same thing.
Yeah, I know. And see, I don't really think he's as much of a skeptic as he is a cynic.
You could be right.
Like, I really don't think he's much of a skeptic, especially, I mean, even Samuel Jackson calls him a cynic. Like, when he's in his office trying to talk him out of going into the room, and he calls him, like, a cynical bastard or something like that. And I really do think he comes off so much more like a very jaded cynic than he does a skeptic.
I would agree. I would agree with that. But the movie calls him specifically a skeptic, so... But I agree with you, yes. I don't think he actually is a skeptic. I think he's an angry, angry man. But, you know, I will say that I think Cusack does a pretty good job in this. And he really has to hold the movie together himself. I mean, it's pretty much him for, you know, a good hour of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, Sam Jackson appears every now and then, and his wife kind of appears at a couple points, but that's about it.
And then he interacts with
his daughter.
Figments of his imagination. Yeah. Yeah, his dad, his daughter. This movie kind of didn't go the way I thought it was going to go, because they had that part in the beginning where he's surfing, and then he gets knocked off his board, and then he starts drowning, but then he's on the beach. And so I thought this was like a whole like symbolic thing of hell, like, you know, 1408 is like hell, and he's, you know, going to hell for whatever reason he's going to hell for, and all the stuff that you like, the flashbacks of, you know, his wife and daughter like keep popping up. I thought that's where that was going.
Well, it kind of was. Like, the whole movie was kind of like his whole version of hell.
Yeah, but like, I thought it was like literally hell. Like, Sam Jackson was like the devil, and you know, like, that's just kind of what I thought it was going.
Sam Jackson would make a good devil.
Yeah,
I think so.
Someone should cast Sam Jackson as Satan. He'd be great.
Yeah.
He'd be great. I'm just saying.
Fire and brimstone, motherfuckers.
Exactly.
You're in motherfucking hell!
But we know he has a problem with motherfucking snakes, so that that could be a problem.
Could be.
Yeah.
Could be.
Anyway, so yeah, is there really anything else specific?
Mm.
I mean, before we get to the endings, like, is there anything
else? Yeah, no, I just want to get to the endings.
Yeah, I think I'm ready to talk about the endings.
All right, so this movie has not one, not two, but four different endings.
Yes.
And three of the four are pretty drastically different from each other.
Yeah.
Two of them are the same with one minor difference. Yeah. Now, the reason for this is there was like a test screening or something, and they hated the original ending, so they changed it. I forget which one is the actual original ending, though.
The original ending is the one that where they're at the funeral.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, there's two of the endings have John Cusack dying, and two of the endings have him living.
Yes.
And the original ending has him dying, and they're at his funeral, and Sam Jackson comes to give his wife his effects that he had left behind in the room when he burned it down. And one of the things is a tape recorder that he talks into throughout the movie. Sam Jackson is in his car and about to leave because the wife didn't want his stuff, and he plays the tape recorder, and he hears the daughter's voice kind of implying that she was actually really there in the room. And then there's a jump scare where he sees a ghost in the mirror, and then it goes back to 1408, and it shows John Cusack's ghost in the room, like stuck in the room forever.
Yeah.
Right.
And then there's the ending
that's
that does
the original ending.
Which I don't like. I don't like that ending.
Yeah, and then there's an ending that makes absolutely no sense.
Oh, well, I was going to say, I don't like that ending, the one where – the original ending. And then there's the one that makes no sense, which I don't really like either. But basically both endings where he dies I don't like.
Yeah. So, yeah, the one that makes no sense –
Yeah, the two – go ahead. Yeah, because I didn't get this ending either.
Okay. So so we see the part in the movie where John Cusack thought he left the room. He's in his house and he's writing up some manuscript about his experiences in the room, I guess. And he's got this envelope that he's going to take to the post office to send off to his publisher, played by Tony Shalhoub. And then it's revealed that no, he didn't leave the room. So then the second alternate ending that makes no sense is the Tony Shalhoub gets that manuscript, and then it turns out he's in the room somehow.
Yeah, I don't know.
None of that makes no sense, because if he didn't really send the manuscript, how did Tony Shalhoub get it? And then how did Tony Shalhoub end up in the room? Like, none of that made sense.
I didn't get that ending at all. It was like the room came with the manuscript, or I don't know. That ending was just kind of weird.
Yeah, I kind of...
I didn't get it either.
I kind of get that. Well, I don't get the ending, but I assume what they were going for is the stereotypical "oh, the killer's still alive" and jump scares you right before the credits kind of ending. But in this case,
yeah,
it makes no sense.
I think
sense.
So. That's what it felt like.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's the two endings where he lives.
Yeah. With one minor difference between both of them.
Yeah, Steve, you want to talk about those?
I think it's a significant difference. In the new real ending, he survives it towards the end of the room. The only way, and I guess we didn't actually talk about this, so major spoiler time. He survives the hour in the room because no one's ever survived an hour in the room, and it starts over. And basically what he's told is you can relive this hour again or you can kill yourself.
Yep.
So he decides instead that he'll go for the kill yourself option, but he'll do it by setting the room on fire.
Yep.
Which, of course, he does. Which is actually pretty ingenious. So in two versions, he survives the room fire, and in the official, now official ending, afterwards, he's, of course, back together with his wife, and he's looking through his effects from the room that burned down. And the only thing he saves is his little mini tape recorder and plays it, and on the tape is the voice of his dead daughter saying, you know, what the conversation they had in the room. And his wife hears this.
Mm-hmm.
and he sort of stares at her knowingly while she is staring at him, you know, with her mouth open, covering her mouth in horror. And he's just looking at her like, yeah, yep. I told you, shit happened. The other ending, the same thing happens, except his wife doesn't hear the voice.
Right.
Which implies that this was all a hallucination, and he's the only one for whom it's real. Mm-hmm. And that of the four endings, that's my favorite ending. That's the one that makes the most sense to me. Because it all was just a huge hallucination. And the only way it makes sense is for him. Well, because nobody else can hear that.
The different, like, it's a very minor thing physically. Like, either she notices or she doesn't notice. But the implication is, again, if she doesn't hear it, it means it was all a hallucination. And if she does hear it, it basically implies that there is an afterlife, and like his cynicism has been wrong, like the whole time, and like blah blah blah.
Well, I think you get his cynicism has been wrong the whole time either way, because I think he's a changed man in the other version of it, because he can still hear his daughter.
Yeah,
even if no one else can. So,
well, does that make him
a huge implication?
Does that make him less cynical, or does that make him slightly crazy? Like maybe the room altered his sanity a bit, and he never quite recovered.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah. but yeah,
that's really the ending I prefer, though. Yeah. I prefer that ending the most, because it's the one that seems to be the most coherent with him yelling at Samuel Jackson in the fridge.
I'm good with either of those endings. I mean, it really changes the movie depending on which one you're watching. I kind of like the one where the wife hears it, though, just because I love how he performs his performance on his face, like his facial performance when he's looking at his wife listening to the tape. And just kind of the little mouth twitch that he does, like he wants to smile but he doesn't, like that. I thought it was a great moment, and you only get that in that ending where she hears the tape.
I don't disagree. I actually like that ending as well. I just don't like it as much. Those really are the two best endings, mm-hmm. at least for me.
Yeah, Jason.
I like the one where she hears the voice on the tape recorder too, just because it means all that shit really happened. that's the only reason why I really liked it.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Here's a hard list or game you can play at home. Name all the movies that John Cusack was in where he gets rained on or is in water.
Well, it happens a lot in this movie.
Yep.
he's in the ocean once, he's drowning in his hotel room once, and the sprinklers go off.
Yep. Yeah. There must be like a clause in his contract where he's got to get rained on or be put in water at least once in a movie. Because I swear, every John Cusack movie I've ever seen him in, he's getting rained on or he's like swimming in like the ocean or something.
Or what's what's the one with...
It's like Tom Cruise in Running.
Yeah. what's it called? The one with about the motel.
Oh, Identity.
Yeah, Identity. It's raining that entire movie.
Yes.
And not only like is it raining, but they're outside in the rain almost the entire movie.
Yep.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's another good movie.
It is. I like it. With Nipsey Hussle.
Yeah.
Yes.
But anyway, so.
Okay, I just want to mention that.
Ready for See It and Skip?
Absolutely.
Jason?
Sure. Reason to see it, if you like to see John Cusack basically interact with a room and nobody else or nothing else for about an hour, give this movie a go.
They could have called this The Room.
They could have called this The Room, yes.
You're tearing me apart, Sam Jackson.
You know, I could see Tommy Wiseau yelling at a refrigerator.
Yes, yes, I can too.
I guess that Tommy Wiseau probably I would guess that he probably yells at his refrigerator at least 3 times a
week. I could also see Tommy Wiseau being one of, like, the really frightening things to appear to John Cusack in this
movie. There you go. Yeah, that too. Yes.
I want to remake this movie with Tommy Wiseau. Oh, hi, ghost kid.
Well, he kind of did. If you've ever seen The House That Drips Blood on Alex.
Oh, yeah.
It's a short film that he did. It's not the same, but it's kind of similar, where just the house is doing crazy stuff to Tommy Wiseau. I did not see us.
It's bullshit. Oh, hi, ghost.
All right, Steve, what's your see it?
John Cusack's really good in this. John Cusack is worth seeing. He carries the movie on his back. Basically, the whole running time is just him, and he pulls it off really well, and not a lot of people can do that.
Yeah. My reason to see it is that it builds great tension and atmosphere, basically. Skip it, Jason.
Would agree.
I say skip it if you don't want to be confused by which fucking ending to watch. If you like your movies that have one ending, probably not want to see this movie because you have 4 to choose from.
I say skip it because the movie claims that John Cusack's a skeptic and he's not. He's just a cynic. Get your skepticism right, Hollywood.
My reason to skip it is that it does not have Tommy Wiseau. No. Actually, mine is kind of a joke answer anyway, but it's if you hate The Carpenters. Like, if you really, really hate The Carpenters.
You're going to hear that a lot.
Yeah, you will hear that song a lot in this movie. All right, so something new we have here is Steve and I will have an extra completely random movie comparison between these two movies that are not the one that Jason suggested.
Yeah, Jason's off the hook because he came up with the original connection.
Yes.
Yay.
So, Steve. So,
Nick, do you want to go first? Why don't you go first?
I can go first. Mine's actually not that clever, but both movies have nooses.
Nice.
Yeah, because the room tries to get John Cusack to hang himself, and then there's a big plot point in House on Haunted Hill where a woman is hanged. Well, quote-unquote hanged.
Yeah.
Hung.
Yeah. Hanged.
Hanged. Hung. Whatever.
I'm going to go with booze.
Yeah.
Booze is the frequent plot point of both movies.
Scotch.
So, scotchy in both films. There's lots and lots of drinking, and apparently, if you're going to stay somewhere creepy, you can't do it sober.
Good point.
Scotch and ghosts.
Oh, I'm sorry. Fair
scotch enough. And ghosts. Yes, scotch and ghosts. Scotch and ectoplasm.
Yeah. All right. Well, that'll about do it for the main part of the show. As we said previously, the tower has been laid to rest, at least for now. But in its place, we have a new game.
We do.
This time, though, it's a listener game. So, Jason, you're off the hook for this one.
Okay, I'm still going to play along, but okay.
Yeah.
you just don't get to play now.
Yeah, you don't get to play right now, but you can play once I post the show.
Okay. Actually, you don't get to play now when we're recording this, but you do get to play now when you're listening to us.
Yes.
Okay, I will pretend not to listen.
No.
Okay, so you can play now, Jim.
Yes. Okay. All right. We call this game Seen and Heard.
How do you make them?
I'm a trifle deaf in this ear. Speak a little louder next time.
All right, and here's how it works. We will play 2 movie clips, one easy one and one hard one. All you have to do is leave a comment telling us what movie each clip comes from. If you get the easy one, you get a point. If you get the hard one, you get 2 points. If you get both, you get 3 points. It's a first-come, first-serve game, though, so you gotta answer fast. Anything else you want to add to that, Steve?
No, that sums it up pretty well.
All right. So first, here is the easy clip.
Made you think you could put your hands on my fiancé.
All right, and here is the hard clip.
Now we have certain artifacts here, which we date from 1950 to 2000. We'd like any information you can give us on them. Very little exists.
And that's about it for this episode. We made our very first episode.
Yay!
And I'm glad I got to be a part of it. I'm so happy.
It wouldn't have been as special if it were anybody else.
Indeed.
Aww, I feel special.
Except maybe Nolan.
No.
No. If you like us or have something to say, please leave us a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Until next time, I am...
I just want to throw in also, if you hate us and think we suck, leave us a comment too.
That
because those are fun to read.
Indeed.
Yeah, those are fun to read. So if you think we're absolutely shit, tell us. Sorry.
So until next time, I am Nick Jobe of Your Face.
I am Steve Honeywell of 1001 Plus.
And Jason.
Yes, I'm sorry, I fell asleep.
Oh, you're from? Where are you from?
Yes, I'm from East Chicago, Indiana. No, I'm from. I'm also from Your Face, which can be found at yourfacesa.com and the Lair of the Unwanted podcast, the other official podcast of Your Face,
but not really the main one.
That's arguable.
Yeah. All right.
We have more episodes. We have more episodes.
All right. So stay tuned next month where we take a look at movies that feature someone better known as a director in a prominent role. But he or she cannot have directed the film. I forgot to add that part.
And stuff.
That's great. This time I bet. Hey, what's the matter you? Hey! Got no respect. Hey! What do you think you do? Hey! Why you look so sad? Hey! It's not so bad. Hey! It's a nicer place. Hey! Shut up.